So, hello, good morning. My name is Juan. I am part of the, what we call ourselves affectionately, the occasionals. We have been authorized by the Bishop of Guildford to do this. But he's canny on that, because we are only allowed to do this occasionally. So he was kind of hedging his bets, limiting his risks. So today we continue our series on the book of Philippians, and the theme for today is shining like stars. Last week Joe and Grant explored the subject of belonging, and that we belong to the church, but more importantly to Christ. So today is the continuation of this, so it's belonging, but well, and belonging in a manner that reflects the glory of God and makes an impact on the outside, on society at large. But before I get on to the message, I would like to play a little game of real or fake. Now, for this, I need a volunteer. I'm going to show you a series of objects, and you have to take guess if they're real or fake. And as a little incentive, I've got a real bar of chocolate from Finland. Seriously. I mean, if you never had Finnish chocolate, you're missing out, because it's the same quality as Swiss, but with much more quirky flavor. So I need one person that wants to, for the chance of winning a real bar of chocolate from Finland, you just have to guess whether a number of objects are real or fake. Any takers? Does somebody like chocolate? Come on, I can see a couple of nudges, but nobody coming forward. If not, Chris, come on. Oh, there is one. Sorry, the missus was nudging you. So basically, it's really simple. It's a 50-50 jobby. There are a number of objects that I got plonked out some images. And you've been such a good sport that you can have the finished chocolate. Don't finish it all at once, though. Thank you, Chris. Now, the reason I was inspired to do this this little game is the first four words of this passage. Paul talks about, therefore, my dear friends. That's how it starts. And it's really simple, isn't it? It rolls off the tongue quite easily. And it could almost be some sort of kind of a throwaway remark, you know, my dear friends. And a bit more than 10 years ago, I went to Newcastle upon Tyne, to my sister's house, to get to fetch some furniture. So I rented this van, and I kind of, as I was trundling up the M1, I was kind of listening to these tapes with this study of Philippians. And somewhere along the motorway, you know, somewhere north of Leeds, I had this kind of epiphany about this letter. And I realized in that moment how deep, genuine, intimate was the connection that Paul had with the Philippians, because he not only founded the church, but also the Philippians took it upon themselves to support Paul in his ministry by sending him kind of money and help several times. And this was neither easy nor cheap in that time. Kind of generally, gifts of money had to be kind of carried by somebody. They didn't have kind of Western Union, PayPal, check, or anything like that. And the person had to travel in sometimes perilous conditions. And there was no guarantee that whatever relief you sent would have arrived. David read in today's passage about Epaphroditus, which was this guy that was sent from the church, and he nearly died in his mission to send this relief to Paul. And I can see this playing out in the church back home. You know, they would say, well, you know, we have this little job. You just need to leave behind your job, your family, for an indefinite period, travel far away in somewhat, you know, precarious conditions, to a city you have never been there before, without Google Maps, without Lonely Planet, without anything, and find a person which we don't know where he is, or indeed if he's still alive. Any takers, any volunteers for that? And that's kind of the level at which they went in order to support Paul. So there is no doubt in my mind about how real and deep this friendship really is. And I'm convinced that Paul wanted the very best for the Philippians. And I think we need to read this letter in that particular light. As an aside, one tool that I sometimes use more in house group settings is to read the whole letter as a prelude to a house group session. I sometimes annoy my house group by just, especially the shorter letters of the Bible. I just start the house group by just reading the whole letter. And you'll be amazed because what they are letters. And if you read them as such, you'll be amazed just how fresh this whole text becomes. So try it out if you've got the stomach in your house group. And to continue, just due to the fact that Paul has genuine concern for them as dear friends, he encourages the church of Philippi and us, in his own words, to continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purposes. And just to clarify one thing, so he's not saying work for your salvation as it earn it in some shape or form, but more something like this. Work out fully the implications of having obtained salvation by God's free grace in such a way that what Christ has already purchased for you on the cross will take root in your life and will grow with the energy and efficacy provided by the Holy Spirit, so that God's work will become manifest on the outside and that your spiritual salvation will influence, permeate, conquer, and become manifest on the outside in every area of your life. Sorry if that came up as a little kind of stream of consciousness, but that's exactly how it came to me. I was just trying to write it there, capture it all. And what Paul seems to be saying here is that this process of kind of outworking our salvation takes time and a certain purposefulness from us. One way that I can illustrate this, it's not the perfect illustration by any stretch, but it's something that happened to me a couple of years ago. I had a potentially quite dangerous infection in my throat. And it was kind of pretty bad. I went to see this doctor, and he told me, well, you need to go to A&E, you need to go to hospital. And you need to go very quick, because in about 6 hours you will have difficulty breathing. Which was, you know, useful information, and not how much time I've got. So I ended up in St. George's Hospital. And the people from George's, they were great. You know, the nurses, the doctors, they really sorted me out. I received great care, so they were fab. But the next day, some doctor came up and said, well, sorry, Sunshine, you have to go. Off you go. And that, without further ado, which is fine, you know, I'm not complaining. It was clinically appropriate for them to discharge me, I guess. And also, they gave me this huge box with these really funky painkillers. And they were so good, I had to chuck them in the bin. Because I had one of those bad boys, and my body went like, ha, 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 likey, likey, when can I have some more of that? And I said, never, Sunshine. So unfortunately, the good painkillers from St. George's had to finish in the bin. I can't do opiates, I'm afraid. So at the point of discharge, I wasn't fully healed of my infection. That's, you know, the truth. But crucially, I was well enough for my body to continue the process of recovery and bring it to completion. And sometimes this works out in a Christian life in a number of ways. Christ has done all that we could ever need for salvation. And then we are the ones who go out and fully live out that process. And one of the things that first came to my mind when I read the passage was this word picture that Paul uses about shining like stars. It's in verse 15. So that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault, in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky. And I'm going to make two observations, which might appear to be contradictory, but they're not. I'll explain myself. And my first observation is on the contrast. Maybe it's better if you see it on the side screens. It's in the contrast of light and darkness that you see when you look at the night sky. Because what he tells the Philippians is that their lights, attracting people to Christ in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, which is no different to what's happening today, really. There is a lot of darkness around us, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail on this, because you probably know this stuff, and you probably know it better than me. If you've got a phone that has 3G, you can just type, tell me what bad things are happening in the world, and you get plenty to last you a couple of days of stuff. So I'm not going to go into this. But what about the other side of the coin? What about the good bits? The bits that are in light? Because there are many beacons of light shining at the moment. And I'm not necessarily talking about the big Christian leaders, you know, the Nicky Gumbers, the Joyce Myers, the Bill Johnsons and all that. You know, I love them. They're great. God bless them. Long may the ministry continue. But what about the stuff that happens every day here in Ashted? You know, the act of kindness done to a stranger with no expectation of any sort of reward. The loving care to a family member that might be unwell. The pastoral care and practical help people receive in difficult times. All these things are part of this. They're little stars that are shining in the sky. And the reason I'm mentioning this kind of small, what would appear to be small scale, acts of kindness, is that it is in the local community where the love of Christ is being lived out. We might be the first person, the first point of contact that somebody gets with Christianity. And therefore, we need to make it count. Because people who are non-believers, they generally don't start, you know, going out there and kind of start listening to sermons online and that kind of stuff. Although they are welcome to do that if they so wish. But more often than not is that, you know, encounter locally or being witness to these acts of kindness, the love of God being showed in action, that really has an impact and it attracts people to the gospel. You know, the soul is kind of attracted by the light. And even if I take it this more broadly, probably the first group of people that I thought that are really shining like stars are people that, nurses that work in the NHS at the moment, especially if you work in the really hard bits. A&E, psychiatric, end of life, and with very sick young kids. I mean, if you're a nurse and you work with any of those, you know, you're a star. End of. No discussion. And my second observation really follows from this word picture of shining like stars. And it's connected to the idea of genuine versus fake. And this is illustrated by this next image that you can see there, not so good on the big screen, but much better on the smaller screens. And it's something that is called light pollution, which, as you can see from the image, basically, so it obscures your vision of the stars. And I like that particular image because it was taken in around 2003 in the USA. They had a massive problem with the power grid. And about, kind of, the power went down across like 5 million homes. So they were all without that absolutely fundamental and sometimes taken for granted piece of modernity, Wi-Fi. But for the ones looking away from the screens, they would have witnessed quite a spectacle. And it is the spectacle of actually being able to look at the stars. And this is the thing, that the light that we generate in our cities and our towns is man-made and artificial. And in a sense, it's fake. Because if the power is turned off, it disappears straight away. And the problem is that this artificial light can cause confusion and can veer us off course. It can obscure our view of the true night sky. I don't know if you've been watching. There has been a series on the BBC called Planet Earth 2. It's a nature documentary. I always love kind of watching Planet Earth. For me, it's like a worship experience because I just revel in the creation of God. Although they give you this claptrap about evolution and all that stuff, it's brilliant just to see the beauty of God and how the complexity of God's creation and how it all fits together and all the behaviors of animals is just great. And one of the clips was about the impact of man that has on different species. And one fascinating one was about sea turtles that apparently when they hatch generally on a full moon, and their instinct is to go towards the light, which is the reflection of the full moon on the surface of the sea. But this particular beach was next to a town that had very bright lights. So unfortunately, some of the hatchlings, instead of going towards the light, going towards the sea, they started making their way up the beach to the town. And it was a bit heart-wrenching, really, to see these little turtles kind of walking around the town very awkwardly, because they're not made to be on land. They're made to be on the sea. And therefore, these poor things, unfortunately, they met their end through exhaustion and dehydration. And it was a way to show the impact that we can have. And this can happen to us Christians as well, if you're not careful. It certainly happened to me, anyway. Last year, when I got to New Wine, I was physically and spiritually exhausted. And on the first night, I remember I went to hear Mark Meluish speak. He was on a kind of little tent. And, you know, he invited, you know, people to come to the front for prayer. And he said something along the lines of, kind of, if you know this is not working and you need to come back to the Father, you know, just come up to the front. You know, and I knew it. You know, I knew what I had to do. So the first night, I didn't need that much of an encouragement just to plonk myself kind of there on the front, you know, yes, it's me. Because I knew that this stuff wasn't working. And I needed God's help. And I needed God's help real bad. But God was good to me. He gave me another chance. And he could do it for everybody. If you come to him, there's always a second chance. His hands are always open, and he's quick to forgive. Because going back to this idea of working out your salvation, as in manifesting more and more of it, crucially, Paul does not say that this is a linear, straight-line process. Yeah? So it's not that we are kind of on an, if you can draw it in a graph, you're ever more on an increasing level of glory upon glory until you pierce the sky and you are kind of at the heavenly gates. It doesn't necessarily say that, because for a lot of us, but certainly for me, it's kind of full of ups and downs. I'm kind of, there's knockbacks and there's challenges that come your way, and sometimes you, it's very difficult for you to deal with them. And I'm going back to my kind of hospital admission analogy. Sometimes we can become ill with the problems of this world. And you need God's help to sort it out. And just like A&E, God's doors are always open. You just have to walk in. You just have to come to him. So I'm going to ask Gary and the band to kind of come up. They're going to play a couple of songs. And I'm going to read a short passage of the Bible in Isaiah 58. But before I do that, I'm going to kind of invite you to, if God's calling you to come to prayer, I'm going to do the Mark Meluish thing. So if what I've said kind of resonated with you, and you know it's you, then come to the front. Or it could be that maybe God has been speaking to you about kind of making certain decisions, change direction. And if it is you, just kind of come to the front. The prayer team will be available. We pray for you. We know it's you. It's between you and God. Some people might have been kind of running away. You feel like you are kind of running away from God. I got that picture of someone running away. If it is you, just don't run away. Just come to God. So Isaiah 58. Isaiah is talking to the people of Israel, and he's having a go at them. Because on the day acceptable to God, they just do whatever they want. And he says the following to them. Is it not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, and to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of God will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with a pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourself on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will shine in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings.